Time to bring in those who wish to go out. You're going to miss the great talk. Those who want to come in, this is your last chance for 3 months. So you better get in soon. A lot of time, people only go out not because they had enough of me, but just they have to go to the letting go room, otherwise known as the rest room in the United States. I was really surprised when I went to the US recently, and why is it in the rest room that people are still tense and unhappy? It's a rest room. You should go there a lot of time and take a rest. Don't just do it to urinate or defecate. It's called restroom, so rest a while. Anyway, there we go. People are coming in. Right, so, as was announced, that tomorrow we have a big celebration. A celebration when we start doing nothing. Not celebrating the war or an invasion or a birthday or a death day or other things people celebrate. This is celebrating nothing in particular. And the particular nothing we're celebrating is the start of our retreat. And as somebody told me yesterday, they say, you monks, you're always retreating. Where other people in the world, we're advancing. And that's a problem with people, always advancing, getting into more trouble. And retreat, it doesn't mean going backwards. Look what the word means. It's a treat, which you do again. So retreat yourself. So that's what we're going to do. The monks are going to have a good treat once more for 3 months. But what does actually really mean? Why do actually we do this? Why do we just go and stay in a nice, simple monastery, as simple as we possibly can make it, but it's so difficult to keep things simple. When you go to, if you went there today, to our monastery, you see it's just a monastery. Tonight, even tomorrow, we'll start putting up the flags. We'll start having all the car parking. We'll start having all the tables. We start having all the noise. So we lose our simplicity for a day. So if you really want to see our monastery as it usually is, go when no one else is there. Not even you. And if you can figure that one out, that's one of the great koans. You understand? When you visit monastery, please leave yourself outside. And then you can see the real simple monasteries. But, you know, in religious life, in spirituality, it's so hard to keep things so simple. And it's just like a simile of our culture. You know, it's not just Western culture, it's Asian culture, it's world culture. Why is it that you find a beautiful top of a mountain? And what's the first thing a person does on top of the mountain? They put a flag on it. Or they put a bunch of stones. Or they put a little bit of graffiti. Ajahn Brahm was here. Or something. I don't do that, but I know some people who do. And it just starts with that. It just starts with a flag. And it usually goes even more to used to be a restaurant. And now on top of the mountains, you don't find flags and restaurants. You found mobile telephone towers. We can't leave anything alone. We can't allow just simplicity just to be. We complicate things so much. And I was just talking to the monk. There's one of our favorite stories. And this I always keep in mind whenever you visit a monastery like you're going tomorrow. It's so hard to practice this. And I keep on reminding myself. It's the old story of the nun who lived in a cave. And one morning, when she went off for simple food, just on arms round. And when she came back, she found a mouse had bitten a hole in her robe. So now I have to mend that hole. And as she was sewing the hole in her robe, she started to think, this is not the first time that mouse had bitten into my robe, that naughty mouse. I'm just fed up with sewing this hole on the robe every day or every couple of days. What if I get a cat? So she asked local villagers, anyone got a cat, you know, to give to my cave so the mouse won't bite the hole in my robe so I don't have to keep sewing the patches on it? And of course, very easy to find a cat. So they gave her a cat. So now she had a cat in the cave, and of course, the mouse scarpered. And that means left, that's English. Left. Went. So it disappeared. So just like I'm going to scarper and disappear tomorrow. But a cat doesn't eat just rice and curries and fruit. The cat has to have milk. So it went to the village and said, I need some milk for my cat to keep the mouse away so I don't have to keep sewing my robe. So they gave some milk every day to feed the cat. And that was just a burden on people, and her carrying a bottle of milk every day from the village. And so she then thought, well, you know, instead of having to bother everybody with some milk, what if I ask for a cow? Because if I have my own cow, then I'd be able to have enough milk to feed my cat, to keep the mouse away, so I don't have to keep sewing my robes. So they managed to get a collection together. You know how we get collections every now and again in this temple? And this was to collect, actually, enough money to buy a cow. So they bought a cow and offered it in the Rage Retreat offering ceremony. Don't you do this. We don't know cows, please. Offered a cow to a monastery. We know, we almost had a cow once. Honestly, this was really sad. I told the monks off afterwards. I never allow this to happen again. There was, you know, just up the road from Bodhinyana Monastery, there is a prison farm. And they were taking cows, you know, from the prison farm over to probably get slaughtered. You know, one of those cows actually happened as soon as it came past the gate of Bodhinyana Monastery, managed to jump out of the truck and went running into the temple sanctuary. It injured itself a little bit, but not that much. And I was away over here at the time. And of course, the truck stopped. And the prison officer said, no, this has to come with us. And I said, no, you should have locked the door, say no, sanctuary, Buddhist sanctuary, the cow must stay. But no, I think the prison officers were a bit too intimidating, I don't know. And said, no, cow's cost a lot of money, it doesn't matter, talk to our treasurer, I'm sure you'd stump up the cash, you know, to buy a cow who've managed to find its way in the monastery somehow or other, but they took it away. Really disappointing. So next time that happens, cows have sanctuary. But please don't keep bringing cows and other stuff to the temple. Otherwise, having kangaroos is enough and parrots. But anyway, that's a true story. Actually, tried to find its way in, but unfortunately, it got taken away again. So that was really sad. But anyway, where was I going with this? Oh yeah, simplicity. She got a cow. But the cow, they can't eat rice and curry or drink milk. So she had to ask all of her supporters, well, can we get some hay, some grass? So every day she came from Armstrong, she had to go back in again with a wheelbarrow with a huge amount of hay to feed the cow, to provide the milk, to feed the cat, to keep the mouse away so that they wouldn't have to spend so much time sewing the robe. But then she thought, getting hay every day is just too much of a burden. What if I get a real donation drive, maybe crowdfunding, and get a field? And so she managed to get enough funds to get a field. So she never needed to actually ask for some hay. So she could keep the cow who provided the milk to feed the cat, to keep the mouse away, who kept on getting into her robes. And then she felt, oh, it's just too much hassle for me to look after this cow. I now need a temple boy. So they had a temple boy. She asked in the village, does anyone want to sort of loan me a boy? And that's actually many offers, because there's some naughty boys in that village. And so they loaned the boy to the nun so that he could look after the cow, to provide the milk, to feed the cat, to look at, to keep away the mouse. So that didn't need, someone's already yawning. It's not going to go on that much longer, I promise. And to have a boy, you can't have the boy staying in the same cave as a nun. So they had to build a house just outside the cave. So she asked for some wood and some bricklayers and a carpenter. Which we need, but not to keep away the mouse. We don't have mice. Do we have Buddhist mice in here? We have Buddhist mice down in Serpentine. And if they do actually eat any of the food, it's against health and safety regulations. So what we do, we usually catch it in a Buddhist mouse trap. It doesn't kill it. I don't know, should I say this online, but actually we usually take it up to the prison, release it there. Because, well, we used to. We don't do it anymore, I think. Because, well, it's made bad karma. If you do sort of, you know, crimes, bad things, that's where you go, the prison. So that's, the mice go there as well. No, we don't do that. At least I don't. I don't know what these other guys do. But anyway. So they had to get some wood to build a little hut to look after the boy, who looked after the cow, which supplied the milk, which supplied the fed the cat to keep the mouse away. You know what happened one day? Somebody was asking the nun, said, oh, can I ask you some questions on some meditation? He said, no, I'm too busy. I've got to look after the building of the hut to house the boy, to look after the cow, to provide the milk, to feed the cat, to keep the mouse from eating holes in my robe. And then started to think, hang on, this is wrong. So she immediately sent the boy home to his family, took away all the wood, gave it away, gave the cow away, sold the field, and just gave the cat away. So it was now back to simplicity, staying in a little cave with no one there. And of course, the next morning when she went on alms round to the village, when she came back, the dear little mouse had eaten another hole in her robe. But that was far less irritating than getting a cat and the milk and the cow and the boy and the hut. That is a problem with simplicity. We always think, oh, this is really necessary. Once I get this will, I'll be happy. Just like your partner. You think, well, I'll take him to the psychologist or the therapist to get rid of this, to get rid of that, and then he'll be, oh, come on. It's only a tiny little hole. Just sew it up. That's enough. But the problem is, oh, I'll do this, and then I'll be happier. This is a problem with just the way we're just afraid of simplicity. We always think if we make it a bit more complicated, then it solves the problems. And does it? That is the nature of our world. Sometimes we just get so complicated. And sometimes it's almost illegal to be simple. And that really is so difficult. Sunday, if you go to Bodhinyana Monastery, you see some of the buildings. Even our main hall where we do the ceremony. We try so hard to keep it simple. You know what happens? Somebody sees a space on the shrine and they want to put something on it. I want to try and get rid of stuff. But they put something else that's really important. It's a nice, expensive statue. It's a photo of somebody. It's something else. Can't we just keep it empty and simple? Because then it's far more easy to clean. Just like years and years ago, we had a group, I think there was a counseling group or a spiritual group having a conference here in Perth. And just as a bit of what they usually do in conferences, send you here, send you there, get a study tour. So they took some people, some of them, actually I think all of them, to the monastery in New Norcia, the Benedictine monastery. And then they took them to Bodhinyana monastery. And they compared afterwards. And they said, well, that some of them preferred the New Norcia monastery because they could have something, some plonk to drink with lunch, some wine. But they also preferred Bodhinyana monastery because it was just so empty, so simple. And one of them, I remember telling me, said, if we lived in a hut like this, my housework would be done in 5 minutes. I wouldn't need to work so hard. Simply because it was simple and uncomplicated. So in your house, how much stuff do you really need? Honestly, you don't need a new sofa. Sit on the floor like you're doing now. It's much easier. Then you don't have to get around places. You don't need so many dishes. Just one meal a day. Like monks, we've just got one dish, one bowl. Everything goes in the bowl. So you have to wash one thing a day. Isn't that a good idea? Instead of having lots and lots of things you always need to clean and wash up. A garden? Who needs a garden? You got King's Park. Who needs a swimming pool? You got Beattie Park. You got all this other. You got the ocean. Why do you need all this stuff? Can we not keep it really simple? And actually, when you go over to Bodhinyana Monastery, one of the things for the rains retreat, you can actually have a look how we live. How we really live. I think all the monks have been warned now, so any contraband they have to hide and get rid of in the forest somewhere, they're probably doing that. No, it's simple. And to see how simple a person can live. It's really weird sometimes being Ajahn Brahm because sometimes, you know, I go overseas, I travel. But you know, I don't go anywhere. People say, you are such a hypocrite, Ajahn Brahm. You've just been talking about meditation, just being. And look at you, you're always going somewhere. And I say, that is wrong perception. I do not go anywhere. I just sit in the aircraft and it moves. I'm always here. I'm still. I don't do anything. Different perception, okay? But you know, some people, they are in the aircraft, always moving. You see them, trying to be the first on the aircraft. Have you noticed, those people who are the first on the aircraft are the people who want to be the first off the aircraft. I think that's hypocritical. If you like the aircraft so much to actually go on it first, you should be the last off. If you don't like the aircraft, you should be last off. So, last on, first off. Makes sense to me. But anyway, just change it. You don't go anywhere. You're always being here. But people are. They want to be ahead of themselves. They're sitting in the lounge or in these sort of the seats and they can't wait to get on. And as soon as they're on, they can't wait to get off. So if any of your kids, you're going on a journey somewhere, and they ask, are we there yet, Dad? You answer, yes, we're here. And that stops them complaining. We're here. Oh, can we get off now? Of course you can't. You always say you can't leave here. This is all where you're meant to be. So shut up and just be here. So you can. Someone's got the giggles now. I'm not going to be able to stop them. So you can learn just how to keep things simple by just, you know, not going anywhere. are not amassing stuff. Why do people amass so much possessions? Now, honestly, when I do go through customs and airports, where is it? You know, this thing over here, this is my luggage. This is my suitcase. And it's wonderful fun having a suitcase such as this. Because what happens is, basically, there's nothing much to search through. So you get through customs really easy. It did happen one day. Oh, many, many years ago. Just coming back from Sri Lanka, I don't know what I must have touched or what smell I had, but it was one of those really late overnight flights. I was really tired. And these were the days they used to have the dogs sniffing to see whether you have any contraband. And the old days when you had to line up, you know, with a very, very small hall at Perth Airport. And I was lining up there, waiting my turn, just being patient, just being here. And they took the dog around, the sniffer dog. It went up and down the queues, up and down the queues. And when it came to me, it stopped. And it put its muzzle inside my robe. I was wagging its tail. And the... it's true. And the guy, the owner, the handler, whatever, had to put it away really hard to get it come away from me. I don't know why, but people started looking at me. And there was a lady in front of me. She took one step further away, and the one behind, I could feel going backwards. I don't know why. And of course, those days, the queue went very slow, but I was happy. And then the dog came out a second time. Up and down, as soon as it came to me, stopped, put its head, I think three times it came up. Three times it did the same, stopped at me. That's how long it took to get through immigration in those days. And of course, as soon as I got through immigration, come over here, sir. And then he said, can I look in your bag? Oh, it takes a few minutes to look in the bag. You know, can I look under your robe? Just open it up. Very easy. Very simple. Not like you guys, you've got so many layers on there. And and they said, well, why? They actually asked, where are the drugs? I said, I don't have any drugs. I'm a Buddhist monk. You know, we're just, yeah, you may think I'm happy, but that's just, you know, just training, that's all. It's not drugs. So, you're encouraging me. So, and then they said, well, why did you think that dog stopped three times with you? And the answer is obviously, you know, compassion, kindness. I forget whether that was the answer, but eventually he said, get out of here. I did. That was a true story. Oops, where's my robe gone? It goes over there somewhere anyway, whatever. So, sometimes it's so wonderful when you don't have much stuff to carry. Keep it simple. So you start with simplicity in your own house. The other mic was reminding me, why is it that people have, why do you want such a big house? And put extensions on your house. You shouldn't have extensions, you should have contractions on your house. No, knock a room off and just set it away or something. Get smaller and smaller and smaller. Number one, far less heating bills. And number two, you don't have to clean so much. And a burglar comes past your house, and, oh, that's a small house, hardly could be anything in there. And you don't need security. It's just so easy when things are small. It's bad. I don't think it's bad for the economy. Because so much stuff in our economy is wasted looking after health problems, social problems. Mental health is a huge drain on our economy. Because we worry so much. Because we've got so much to worry about. Worry paying the bills. Worrying about paying off your mortgage. If you still own 50% of your house to the bank, cut off 50% and give that part of the house to the bank. you live in the other half, and less violence declared, and then you've got equity. Does it work that way in economics? In my mind, it does. But downsize instead of always upsizing. Houses in Perth are so huge. I think if you look in the comparisons, some of the biggest houses in the world are in Australia. Why? And just, number one, it's really bad for the environment. Just how much building materials does it take to build your house? Number two, you know, it's just so much work looking after your house. And number three, the worst one is, this was that story when I heard that there was a lady who won the British lottery, $41 million sterling. That's such a curse to win the lottery. Never do that. Because what happened to her? She had all this money. What am I going to do? So she decided to buy this big mansion in the countryside. Huge mansion. What do you do that for? It's just to impress other people, to show off, that's all. So instead, once she bought that mansion, what happened next? She sold it 1 year later at a loss. And somebody found out, did an article on her. Why did you manage to get this huge, impressive mansion, and now you sold it? And she said, because. The reason was I can't find the kids. It was such a huge house. Husband was in one corner, wife was in another corner, son was in this corner. Even the dog disappeared. Yeah. And it's absolutely true. You can't find the dog. It's too big a house. And I did go and bless. That's one of the things I do, blessing houses. And I did bless her house over in Shelley it was. Huge mansion. And no exaggeration, travelling all the way from Serpentine to Shelley, I needed to go to toilet. So I asked her, where is the toilet? She had to draw me a map. That's absolutely true. A mud map, turn left here, right there. Nowadays, big houses like that always come with GPS. So you can find your way around. So huge. What do people want a big house like that for? So she sold it because it was breaking up her family. Isn't it the case these days that maybe your son has his own room? Another elder son has another room. Daughter has her own room. You have your own sort of, you know, her room, my room, common room maybe. We don't meet each other. We don't learn how to interact. It's one of the big problems of our modern life. We've lost the social skills as we become more wealthy. That's why people are very rich, but they can't live with one another. Have all these family feuds. Please, I know the person's here listening to this, but I was so pleased. They spent some time in Bodhinyana Monastery. I told them the story of the gentleman when I went to see his house at Vardhana, and he hadn't spoken with his son for 7 years. And I used my powers, because they were scared of me. And I said to the older brother, no, it was a younger brother, and his older brother hadn't seen his father for 7 years. They wouldn't speak to each other. And so I ordered the younger brother to call the older brother. And then I was on the phone and said, come to the house now. And I hung up. He didn't dare just get the bad karma of sort of defying Ajahn Brahm. And so what happened? He came and they reconciled for the first time. I told that story. I told that story before. But I told that story to someone and they told me this tonight. They hadn't spoken to their father for over a year and a half. And so I ordered them to call. Otherwise, I'll curse you. I don't curse people, but so I ordered them to. So they spoke to their father first time in a year and a half. That's the sort of stuff I like. Forget about donations. You tell me those stories. They're worth much more. Getting people together. But why do they do that? Why is it that people, same blood, they love one another, and I look at them, they're both good people. Why is it? that they don't learn how to tolerate one another, learn how to live together. And of course, it's because we don't learn that because we're separated from one another, each in our own little part of the house. We all got our own car. Again, bad for the environment. So we don't learn how to tolerate one another, live with one another. So it's great when we have small houses. And because it's, I'm having another birthday celebration. You know, it's really weird. I have a birthday every year. It's just really too much. Maybe I'm going to skip next year and not have a birthday. Well, on my 60th, my brother came along, you know, all the way from England. And you saw him. And we get on really well together. You know, he's a banker. I'm a monk. But we love each other. And why is that? And the reason is because we had to share a room for about 18 years. Yeah, we fought, but we had to get, there's no place to escape. We had to get on. So sometimes small houses, small things are very, very beautiful. Which means downsize. Get smaller places and don't think you're getting on in the world. I mean, the bigger the house, the bigger the car, the bigger this, the bigger that, the bigger the debt, the bigger the worry, the bigger the problem, the bigger the heart attack. So, there's something else in life with simplicity. And that's one thing which, as a Buddhist tradition, that we really should be focusing on. Unfortunately, sometimes people have these huge temples, which are more like palaces, museums than real Buddhist temples. So if this place every now and again is a bit dirty, grubby, it's because it's used. And that's what it's supposed to be like. Human. Not just anemic like a hospital. Now the hospitals are okay too. No, I'm not saying that to doctors and nurses. But there's something human about being a little bit dirty and grubby. That's why, on purpose, I always let my robe come off a little while, a little bit of 5 o'clock shadow, dirt on my glass. It's all on purpose. To show. You don't need to be sort of perfect to be happy and to be loved and be cared for. That's one of the other things. So when you keep it simple, life becomes so much more peaceful and easy, and you have more time in your life. So instead of trying to solve problems by getting a cat if there's a mouse in your house, unfortunately, make sure you don't tell the occupational health and safety officers. But instead of having to have huge houses, instead of having to try and improve, I often think that, this is my theory anyway, I've got lots of theories, most of them are just rubbish, but who knows? I like telling them anyway. The start of the Industrial Revolution, we know, which causes a lot of problems in our life. A lot of it started from when the Western world found coffee. When coffee started coming into Europe from Brazil, they went crazy. They have all these ideas. And when they got the ideas, they started building up and building and building and building. Industrial Revolution. Too much coffee, too much thinking. Now, it's true, you know. That's my theory. You have a cup of coffee. What do you do? Have ideas how to improve stuff. You should always ban coffee and tea before committee meetings. For 2 hours beforehand. And and then people will fall asleep. And those who aren't addicted to the stuff, they can pass all the agenda items. But it is true, isn't it? That's why we have a rule. This monk would actually affirm this. For a Bodhinyana monastery, if someone has an idea, it's their project, we have a rule, if it's your idea, you have to do it. It's amazing just how many rules that's, how many sort of projects that stops. They can't carry on. You should try that in your household. You say, oh, darling, I think we should, you know, have a new kitchen. okay, darling, your idea, you make it. You earn the money, you spend it, but your kitchen. So sometimes it's because we don't see the problems of just so-called improving stuff. And this is one of those bugbears I have. When we try and improve something, we just do not realize just how lucky and how happy and how peaceful we are. Always trying to improve stuff. And for me, that sometimes, what do you want to improve it for? Isn't Bodhinyana Monastery beautiful enough? Yeah, a few of the things are cracking, including me. A few of the things are getting over. There's something nice about that, something beautiful about that. So, if we could only get permission from health and safety councils and other stuff, not to be so perfect. And yeah, sometimes these mistakes happen and people have accidents. That's part of life. What's a big deal? But sometimes we're so afraid of anything which is less than perfection. That even in a forest, we have all these rules and regulations about what we can build and what we can't build. And basically the only way we can build it is to destroy all the trees. That's not a solution. I don't mind telling you this, I'll probably get in trouble again. But somebody I know who was a senior worker in CSIRO, you know, the government sort of research department, working in labs all day, when they saw the latest occupational health and safety rules, they realized they couldn't even work in a lab anymore. Too strict. Now there's something there, yes. No, we have to look after people, but some of that should be an individual choice, that we are careful with our life. But some of the rules and regulations, sometimes that they make life so complicated. Just like, please excuse me, but every now and again you see these signs on the motorway, do not overtake unless safe. Of course you don't overtake unless safe. And if somebody's going to overtake when it's not safe, that sign is not going to stop them. So sometimes I think, crikey, I mean, just where are people's heads at? So I can't resist the story. There was this guy, I mean, it was an unsafe road. And this guy in an unsafe road, he asked the local council, can you please, you know, tell people to slow down on this stretch of road? And the local council paid him no attention at all because, you know, he was only a small farmer, not really significant. So he tried another idea. He put a sign up, his own sign, you know, 50 kilometers an hour sign. And the police said, you can't put up your own signs like that, that's illegal. So he had to take it down. So how can he make this stretch of road really safe? And so all he did, he changed the sign. And the other sign said, nudist colony. And all the male drivers slowed down. That's an old joke. And please, it's a sexist joke. I'll get in trouble again. But anyway, it's only a joke, okay? Don't hurt me too much. But it does work. Anyway, so when we keep life simple, don't have too much. That's one of the things which, even as a monk, you know, you don't have any money. Weird, isn't it? I don't have any cash. I don't have any bank accounts. I don't have any credit card. I don't have, what else do I have? What else? I don't know. But anyway, because we don't have our own cash, sometimes people say, how can you work like that? How can you live like that? Very well. So, there's always kind people around. I work on kindness. If you get stuck somewhere, someone will help you. Now, one of our monks once decided to try that out. So, he was coming from overseas. You know, people sponsor the airfares. And he coming overseas, and when he landed at Perth Airport, I said, you know, when are you arriving? We'll pick you up. He said, no, I'm not telling you when I arrive. I said, but, you know, what are you going to do? You've got no money, you can't catch a cab or a Uber or whatever. And he said, no, just leave it to me. So he just tried. Just living so simple and just relying on generosity and kindness. So he landed at Perth Airport, walked out, he got about 15 metres, and somebody said, "Ah, you're a monk. Are you going to Serpentine?" And they drove him all the way. Kindness is an incredible currency. Much more better than dollars and cents. Much better than Bitcoin. Much better, that's all I know, but it's pretty impressive, isn't it? I know Bitcoin. I haven't got a clue what it means. But kindness coin. We actually maybe start kind coin currency. And every time you come and help with actually just simplifying the treasury by just being a bricklayer, or I will give you kind coin. 100 coins currency. What it means is that, you know, the currency of you're kind to someone else, you look after someone else, and you find that's really all you need. The shared economy. I look after you, you look after me. In a small village, in a small place. The simplicity was something, even living in a small place in UK, in a small, what's it called, a council flat, very tiny. Even there, I realized it was a little bit complicated because we had electricity and a TV. We don't have TVs in Bodhinyana Monastery. So I remember one of the first years I was in this very simple place in the northeast of Thailand. No electricity, no roads, just very simple, timeless. And when we went in there one evening to actually to do a little ceremony for somebody who passed away, we walked in there and saw every one of those houses, which they all built themselves, made of, you know, a bit of wood, thatch, totally recyclable, that in the top terrace, there was about 15 or 20 people in every terrace. The children, parents, uncles, aunts, grandparents, all sitting around a little oil flame lamp. It was just a bowl of oil, and they'd use the top of a toothpaste tube and put an old rag through the center as the wick. It was very smoky, which served the purpose of keeping the mosquitoes away, and had this beautiful warm glow, and I could see it in all the faces of the children and the parents and the uncles and the aunties and the old men and women there who were telling the same old story again and again and again. And the children were laughing because they knew what was going to happen and they were expecting it. This is the reason why I tell the same old stories again and again. You know what's happening. And it but it was beautiful. And that's how they would spend every evening. Together, telling stories, laughing, joking, telling a few lies as well, but just for good reason, for a bit of fun. And it was such warmth, such simplicity, and I realized, even in the small house which I came from, there was some deprivation there. Not learning how to learn to love one another and get to know one another. And have this beautiful family. Somebody you could always rely upon. Someone who would be, you know, your backup when times get hard. So simplicity does lead to a lot of kindness, social support, mental health, physical health. Many people are lonely. We learn that loneliness when we're in our big houses growing up. We get so tense because worrying about paying the bills. We get so worried about what other people think of us. Please don't worry about what people think of you. It's what you regard yourself as. If you're confident, other people like you. And anyway, I like you anyway. We're always so desperate in this place. We like everybody. It's not that. We change our perception of what beauty is. Beauty is kindness. Beauty is simplicity. And there's so many problems in our world. Because, yeah, when it's wars, even terrorism, A lot of that's because of the perceived inequality of people. We all know there's plenty to go around. And also, we don't need to exploit animals so much. There's plenty to go around. And the trouble is, some people want so much. And it's inexhaustible how much some people want. So, why? You're just torturing yourself. Live simple, live peaceful, live shared, be kind. And so sometimes that's one thing. You know, we can talk about mindfulness and meditation, but if we don't live those teachings and learn how to lessen the amount of stuff we have, don't consume so much, don't give so much stuff to Bodhinyana Monastery on Sunday. Yeah, you know, we get so much stuff there, so much rice, we have to keep giving that away, towels, keep giving that away, so many hats for the monks, we have to keep, you know, giving them away, but there's not enough monks to put the hats on. So what are we going to do? Towels, we get so many towels, and I'll make this point to you now, and we get so much bottled water. I don't know why you do that. We got really good rainwater over in Bodhinyana Monastery. We should actually be bottling that and selling it. Holy water from Bodhinyana Monastery. That would be a big seller. But sometimes you've got very kind intentions. You really want to look after the monks and nuns. But be careful of spoiling us. I've seen that happen in too many places. Spoil the monks by feeding them too much. So, keep it simple. So come, enjoy the simplicity. And if you need anything afterwards, I'm saying I'm getting in trouble. If you want to take some towels away afterwards. You know, one beautiful thing which they did. I learned this in the Buddhist Society of Victoria in Melbourne. You know, all the rubbish which we collect on that day. Get heaps and heaps of it. Why? So I ask you maybe to take it home with you. Bring a bag and whatever's left, take it back. Instead of leaving it in the monastery. That's what they do. You put a little bag in the back of your car and it reminds you bought too much. What you bring, you have to take back with you. That will actually make it so we don't waste so much. The wastage is a terrible thing. And how can we stop you? And I try my best to reduce food wastage. That's the reason why I eat so much. It's just environmental reasons. It's not greed. I got all these excuses. But anyway, simplicity is a very beautiful thing in our world, and quite honestly, that we have to learn how to live by example. One robe, that's all you have as a monk, it's enough. You can wash it at night time if you need to. You don't need too much. If you're cold, wear an extra jacket or something. So instead of actually always having too many heaters on. If you are too hot, you can take some things off, but not too much, please, because it might corrupt the monks. So we try and keep things as simple and as kind as possible. And one last little thing before I go about simplicity and kindness, because somebody showed me a SBS video the other day, and it was sometimes whenever a religion or a practice comes into a new country, we have to be really careful to make sure, you know, that we adapt to the modern customs. And this was a video of a monastery over east where it said that the once a person becomes a monk, they can't hug their mother. And you know, that's not true. Because everybody knows I'm not just a monk who meditates or tells funny stories. I also just, I know my Pali, I've done my studies before, I've got a brain. And actually the rules are, for monks, if it's touching another woman out of lust, and you know, out of sensory desire, that is wrong. And you know, religious figures get into a lot of trouble when they don't keep that rule. You know, sexual abuse. If we have any lust inside of us, no, we're not going to touch anybody. And there's another thing about, it does say that a monk is not allowed to touch even the mother out of affection, because you like to. But if it is out of kindness, compassion, and if it is out of sensitivity to the cultures of your local land, then if that is a motivation, that is not against the monastic rules. So if your mother wants to hug you, you should let her. Kindness. Otherwise it looks really weird. You know, what, you're supposed to be kind and sensitive, you monks. You're not going to be depraved by your mum. So does that actually feel that it's right that you're not allowed to touch your mum? That doesn't make any sense to me at all. So, if your mum wants to hug you, it's fine. And if your mother is just about to fall under a bus, please hug her and take her out quickly. Because sometimes a lot of these superstitions, I say them superstitions, is because people just follow what they're taught rather than actually knowing what's, you know, what is really there. The rules for monks and also nuns are so as, yes, so you can actually lessen your own sort of cravings, but also out of enhancing the respect for Buddhism of the local community as well. So you're not regarded as some weirdos imported from a foreign country. You're sensitive, out of kindness and compassion, out of simplicity as well, and out of restraint, because, you know, if a monk does have any lust, or none has any lust, yeah, keep off. But if it's out of kindness, compassion, sensitivity to time and place, please do so. If anyone wants to argue with me, be careful. I know my Pali. I know my scriptures, and I can quote like hell. So anyway, that's just, if any of you see that video, that please, you know, it was not accurate. SBS. Okay, there we go. Now we have the opportunities for comments, questions, and complaints. What have you got? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. What have you got? Nothing. It wasn't working again. Oh. It must be a hex. Every time I come here, it must be the power gets in there. So, any questions from the audience? Anyone got anything they'd like to say? Yes, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. So, I mean, for me, what you said makes total sense, that the whole idea of trying to convince him, you know, it just kind of seems too much.
Exactly. So you can use my excuse, which many of you know, when people come and ask me, can you do a blessing in my house? Can you come and give a talk somewhere else? Can you come overseas to visit Sri Lanka again? And then I just say, I'll think about it.
Yeah.
And there's so much stuff I've been thinking about for about 10, 15 years.
I'll blame it on my husband, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still thinking about it.
Just say, we're thinking about it.
Thank you.
Because that means you're not lying, but you're not doing anything either. Really, that's my trick, but too many people know that now, so it doesn't really wash. Well, you can actually stand your ground as well. Look, Dad, when you grew up, how big was your house? Did you enjoy living there? Did you have fun? Did Did you learn how to love everybody? Yeah, you argued as well. And that was one of the great things which I remember so many times. My mum and dad would argue. They shouted at each other. And sometimes they wouldn't talk. You know, people. But because they were in such a small house, they could not escape. And they couldn't escape from the kids either, who'd look at them and say, what are you doing, mum and dad? And so after a while, they made up. And I always remember my mother and father making up together, hugging, kissing, saying sorry together. And that was such a beautiful part of my childhood. I learned that having arguments is natural. Of course we have differences of opinion. But to make up afterwards, that's also natural. So don't just have an argument. Make up. It's almost worth having an argument for. For the beauty of making up. So it would be lovely. I would like just to see, who is it? Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. Instead of these stupid handshakes, do it properly. And who's the other one? Mr. Turnbull and Mr. Shorten. That'd be wonderful, wouldn't it? Just to see people, they're human beings, they're Australians, they want to help Australia become a nice place. How about doing something beautiful? Totally unexpected, totally out of left field. Who knows? Anyway. Any other questions? Oh, you got one, yes. At the back over there, hi.
The monks wear shoes.
Yes, we sometimes wear shoes, especially in the snow. But even though I wear shoes in the snow, I don't wear socks in the snow. And I was in South Korea, in the snowfields. It was minus 15 degrees centigrade. It was so cold that many locals opened the refrigerator to get warm. And did I wear socks as I walked through the snow? Not at all. And you know, I was with another monk, he's a very well-known monk in South Korea, and I couldn't believe it. That, you know, he had two fingers missing. Because in that tradition, you know, to show just how tough he was, he actually burnt his fingers off in a candle flame. So, wow, that's going a bit far. But then, they looked at me not wearing socks in the snow, and they thought that was worse. I don't know why. People are crazy. So they had all these TV cameras, they were pointing at my feet. Not looking at me or this other monk. So what are you looking at my feet for? Wow! Western monk doesn't wear socks in minus 15 degrees. That must mean he must be a holy monk. Crazy stuff. But anyway, so I just got good circulation. And look, a lot of times it's not thinking about it, worrying about it. If you think about, ooh, this is cold, ooh, it's cold, ooh, I'm going to die. That's why you die. It is true, your mind is so powerful. And it's not just psychic stuff or special stuff. You're just learning to have a good, positive attitude. It's only cold. It's only heat. It doesn't kill you. That means that when it's cold outside, this weather now, what should you do? Keep a warm heart. And when it's hot, keep a cool head. That is called Buddhist climate control. Thank you for listening. Now we can finish off for tonight. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavatam.
Happy world, Amy. So akato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. So patipanno bhagavato sāvaka-saṅgho saṅkhaṁ namāmi.